We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Hello and welcome to ESPN Crick Info Power Play, where we bring you women's cricket uncut. I'm joined by my co-host Valkyrie Baines, and it was just over a year ago that the two of us were not sitting across computer screens, but we were together live in the flesh here in South Africa, covering a historic Women's T20 World Cup where South Africa reached an ICC final for the very first time. And it was the women that did it. They became the first senior side to reach the final. They lost, but, you know, that's details. They won everything else. They won hearts. They won minds. They won over the South African public. And it was an incredible year of women's sport.
Yeah, that was such an incredible tournament to experience. And for my first visit to South Africa, that was an incredible experience as well. One that I hope to repeat very, very soon indeed. But one of the things that really stood out for me while I was there was that enthusiasm for the home side reaching the final. It was just such a wonderful achievement. And it's one that should have laid the foundation for unparalleled growth in the game there. Is that what's happened though?
You know, at the outset, I'm going to say no, and that Cricket South Africa really wasted an opportunity to capitalize on the gains made in the immediate aftermath of the T20 World Cup. What they should have done, and they couldn't because the WPL launched straight after that, was immediately start to get a women's professional league going. They waited about 6 months. In that time, they should have also done the search for a new coach, which they didn't manage to do. So they ended up with a situation where the next time they played, the coach hadn't been decided on. They had to go with Hilton Marenga, who's been in charge now for 13 years, which is a very, very long time, although he's had a lot of success. And then they decided they would launch a professional women's league. And when we say professional, I just want to give you a little bit of perspective on that. So there are now six women's franchises, if we call them that. They are the domestic provincial teams with slightly fancy names like the Garden Route Badgers, who are based in Oudtshoorn in the southwestern districts, which is in the Cape. And it's a place best known for its ostriches. And these days for Othniel Bartman, the SA20's leading bowler right up until the end. But they've got these six franchises and their women are contracted to the franchises, 11 per franchise. But the highest earning female player is earning around the same as a men's player in the second division of South Africa's provincial domestic league. So not the top eight teams who are earning fairly decently, but the lower division. So that's giving you a kind of idea as to the money that the women are earning playing so-called professional cricket in South Africa. We haven't really had a lot of opportunity to see whether the level of competition is good. And also whether the depth in the women's game is growing, because that's the challenge. So South African men are produced from the elite school system. And we see that all the time. It's very, very seldom that you will get a males player who arrives at the international scene who hasn't come from one of these elite schools. Dale Steyn is maybe one outsider example. But for example, the latest South African under-19 sensation, Kwena Mapaka, comes from St. Stidians. Kagiso Rabada went there. You can see the pedigree. Women's players are a little bit different in that the school systems didn't play elite sport up until quite recently. That's changing. So now you can mine that sort of field and see what you can find. But I don't think Cricket South Africa, who've got a lot of problems of their own to deal with, are really tapping into this. And I think that once you peel away that top layer of South African women's players and we get below the kind of Marizan Cups, Dane van Niekerk, and even younger than that, you know, Sune Lys, for example, there isn't too much there. And that's my worry. You need a strong talent pool to continue your international success. Currently, South Africa having a lot of international success. So it's just about when that starts to wane, what is the future going to look like?
So it sounds like there's still work to be done. But I mean, you mentioned Hilton Mooreng there, and he has overseen South Africa to second position on the Women's Championship. Historic wins over Australia in a T20i and an ODI. and the successful transition to a new captain, Laura Wolfhart. Now, she joined us on Power Play just before the test between South Africa and Australia to speak about these issues and a lot more. Shall we have a listen?
We're joined today by a very special guest, Laura Wolfhart, South Africa's all-format women's captain. Laura, it's such a pleasure to have you on our show and to have watched and covered all your cricket over the last several years. I guess we got to start with the big question. You're now the captain and you've led the side for a good few months to some incredible results. You're sitting in an excellent position on the Women's Championship, second on the log with an equal number of points as Australia. What's it been like?
Hi, thanks for having me. Yeah, it's been an awesome experience. I think I've been learning a lot as I've been going. Obviously not have had that much captaincy experience in the past. And now sort of been thrown in the deep end, having to learn bowling plans, where before I was just a batter and could just focus on myself. But yeah, it's been really cool. I think I've gotten a lot of help from a lot of different people and still have a lot to learn. But I've enjoyed the challenge so far.
Yeah, and how do you manage that? I mean, you mentioned that, you know, being a batter is quite a personally focused endeavor and you're kind of just worrying about yourself and I suppose one other person that you're trying not to run out at the other end. But when you're managing all 11 and then even 15 in a squad, what do you have to change?
It's been quite different. I've been exhausted after games because now I have to think for the whole of the fielding innings as well. Normally, I could just chill and just field. But I actually think it's been good. I think I've been thinking about the game in different ways, sort of thinking about conditions, thinking about opposition. So I think in the long run, it'll actually help my batting. And I think it's also made me focus a bit less on myself and my own results. So I think in the long run, it'll be good for me as a cricketer overall.
You took some time to sort of decide whether you wanted to take on the captaincy full-time, having held it in an interim role. And I guess it's a position that's changed, you know, a couple of times over the last 18 months or so. What was the first thing that sort of came into your head when, you know, it was possible that you were going to be the captain? And what sort of thought process did you go through to now where you are the captain?
I think it's something that I've always wanted to do one day, but I didn't think it would come sort of this soon in my career. I guess my first thought was sort of, am I ready for this already? Like, do I know enough about my game to be telling other people what to do? So yeah, the first thought was kind of just like, oh, this is a bit soon. But yeah, just had some good chats with Hilton and my parents and some other people who are close in my life and just... Yeah, I think it's a great opportunity, one that I can let pass me by. And yeah, it's been all right so far.
You've had a couple of great results against Australia, South Africa's first win against them, and then another one in the one-day series as well. What's it been like sort of touring out there? And is there a sense that, you know, Australia's aura might be slipping a bit, that, you know, they're there to be beaten a little bit more than they once were perhaps?
It's been amazing to get the two wins. I think to have them in both of the formats as well will go a long way for our team. It's always tough coming up against them in a World Cup, knowing that you've never ever beaten them in any format ever. So to have those wins, I think will just mentally, hopefully, change a few things for us in those big tournaments. I think they do still have a bit of an aura about them. They're still a really good cricket side. I think they're just so consistent and so good at what they do. But yeah, at least we know that we can beat them if we play our best cricket. But it still takes something special to beat them. So we know we have to be switched on at all times.
Laura, you talk about Australia and the dominance. You know, they've had a year where they've won a Women's T20 World Cup, a Men's 50 Over World Cup. Their under-19 side has just won a World Cup. It looks like they're pretty unstoppable. And you're there now. You've had a good idea of the facilities, of what they have to work with. And if you were to compare that with what we've got back home in South Africa, what would you say are the big differences? What can we learn from them? And what can everybody learn from them to grow the game?
Yeah, I think the difference in women's cricket is even bigger. I think it's huge. They're in their, what, 9th or 10th season of Big Bash, which is probably one of the most competitive cricket leagues in the world. Whereas we've only just introduced domestic contracts this season. So yeah, they're probably 10 years ahead of us women's cricket development-wise. The facilities are amazing over here. We had a couple of days training at Cricket Central in Sydney, and yeah, it's nothing like anything I've been training at home. So yeah, I think we still have a long way to go, but it's nice to see how it can be done and what's possible in the women's game.
You say nothing like anything we've got at home. I mean, how so? Is it just that there's more nets or that they're better, or what is it that's so different?
Yeah, that new facility is very cool. They've got like 18 indoor lanes. They've got something like 30 or 40 outdoor lanes, and they sort of have different wickets that mimic different conditions around the world and around Australia. Whereas I sometimes struggle to find turf in Cape Town for a net session. So yeah, it's very different.
And making that T20 World Cup final at home last year, have you got a sense, albeit an early one, of the legacy that created for women's cricket back in South Africa?
Well, I think the introduction of the domestic structure was a big step. And I think that sort of directly came as a result of the World Cup. I think obviously we won't see the results from it right away, but I think for the future, it's amazing to have more players that are able to play professionally around the country. And yeah, I think the interest has definitely grown. I was at Newlands the other day, and definitely a lot more people sort of recognizing me and knowing about the women's game than they did before. Whereas before I would just be another random person at the cricket. So yeah, I think overall there's a definite increase in the interest, especially in Cape Town, I think.
Yeah, just from a depth perspective, Laura, I mean, we've seen a few new faces in the South African team. Elise Marie Marks comes to mind, Klubi as well. One of the concerns, I guess, after that T20 World Cup was that South African cricket maybe had a really strong top tier in the women's game, but we didn't know what was beneath that. So what have you seen, and what's the quality of player that's coming through?
I think that is probably still a bit of an issue. I think just because our domestic structures have been unprofessional for so long, the gap between provincial cricket and international cricket is just too big. But yeah, I think Elise Marie and Ayanda have been amazing. They've really taken the opportunity with both hands on this tour so far. But yeah, obviously just to find more talent like that is tricky when the domestic structure isn't quite there. But hopefully with the introduction of the new contracts and more players playing full-time in 5 to 10 years' time, I think there'll be a lot more players coming through.
And if you compare that to, I mean, you've had a year where you've played in Pakistan, you've played Bangladesh at home, New Zealand at home, and Sri Lanka to come. So you kind of know these other countries, their setups, and a little bit about their depth. Where would you put South Africa on a kind of spectrum? And also, if you could tell us a bit about what you saw in Pakistan.
I'd say we're probably near the top, or top 4 or 5. I think obviously Australia, England, India are sort of leading the way with their domestic leagues and domestic structures. And then New Zealand also have the Super Smash, their tournament, which I think goes pretty well. I think the introduction of a domestic league would really benefit us a lot, like a women's SA20 or something, just even if it's small. I think just playing high quality cricket against each other for a couple of weeks is really important. Just playing more games as much as we can. But then other countries such like Sri Lanka, Pakistan, are probably in the same boat as us, if not a bit worse off. I'm not sure if they have much domestic cricket going on. But yeah, it was awesome to tour to those places like Pakistan, just to see what women's cricket's like over there.
What sort of a role do you see the growth of franchise tournaments in the women's game playing in the development of young cricketers, but also, I guess, where bilateral series lie within that? Because I guess they act as a bit of a shop front for players to get a gig in a franchise. So how do you sort of see that whole scene developing in the women's game over the next year or two?
Yeah, I think it plays a huge role in developing players. I think in these leagues, you get exposed to international cricketers who come over and play in your league, and you play some really high quality cricket for a couple of weeks. And I think you can see it in Australia and the Big Bash, and how good the Big Bash is, and the quality of cricket, and now how good the Australian team are as well. Because they have so many players that have played at that high quality that the step isn't too big to get to international cricket. I think it's definitely something that would benefit us quite a bit in South African cricket.
Laura, who's the best opponent you've had in a Big Bash situation, or, you know, whether it's at one of these other franchises? You've done a bit of WPL as well. What's been the most kind of tricky and tense situation that you've got there?
I find Big Bash the hardest cricket-wise. I just think everything's in Australia is quite bouncy and the bowlers are quite fast. I just find the whole tournament quite challenging. So yeah, I think it's a really big challenge when I come over here for the Big Bash, and it's a long tournament as well. It's a difficult one to if you're not scoring runs. But yeah, it's an awesome opportunity to be able to come over here, and I think all the teams are pretty evenly matched and pretty good.
And what about the WPL, your first experience, or everyone's first experience of it last year, but happening again this year? What was that like to be a part of?
It was a bit of a whirlwind. I sort of got roped in last minute and sort of landed and was playing within the next 24 hours. But yeah, it was an awesome experience. The crowds were amazing. The whole vibe around the tournament was awesome, and we were treated really well there as well. So yeah, I'm really happy to be going back. I think it was really exciting and a really fun tournament to be a part of.
Is it about the carnival is almost what I want to ask the WPL. Or do you feel that some real cricketing skills could also be gained there? Because I guess trips to the subcontinent are becoming more frequent. The next T20 World Cup is in Bangladesh. The next 50-over World Cup is in India. So how much can you gain from that tournament that will help in the future?
I think massive amounts. I think with it being played in Mumbai last year and now this year in Bangalore and Delhi as well, just conditions-wise, I think it's awesome just to be able to play all around India and face all of their domestic cricketers as well. And you're also playing against different international bowlers, which is awesome. So it definitely helps. There is a bit more social media stuff like outside of the game than there are maybe in different tournaments. But I do think cricket-wise, it's still a very high quality and there's a lot to be learned there.
And no, just on your own game, I mean, I remember there was a time when there was a lot of discussion around strike rate and you as a more of a 50-over player who liked to, you know, take your time, get in and so on. And then in the last, I guess, what would you say, 18 months, you've just transformed your game and almost become a bit of a power hitter. We did a piece last year on power hitting in the women's game and, you know, whether the base comes from the legs or from strength of the arms or whatever the case might be. What have you done and what have you worked on? Because I mean, you're quite a meticulous person with a lot of, you know, strings to your bow. So how have you changed your game like this?
Yeah, obviously started my career more as a 50-over player and then had to hit the gym a bit to get into the T20 side. Yeah, firstly, just had to sort of build more of a strength base. I think I was a bit skinny and lanky when I first started. And just sort of figuring out how power hitting worked for me. I think when I first started, I had lost all my shapes when I tried to hit too hard and sort of try to do it like other power hitters do it, but that's not really me. I still need to keep my shape, still sort of play good cricket shots, but just change my timing a bit or hit it a bit earlier. But yeah, it's not always easy to do. I still tend to try whack it and hit it way too hard sometimes and lose all of my shapes. But yeah, it's a work in progress.
Is there anyone that you, when you were going through that process of improving your power hitting, is there anyone that you sort of modelled your work on or anyone that you saw as a great proponent of that you wanted to emulate? Or was it a case of just doing what you needed to do to keep your own game doing what you do best, but taking it further?
Yeah, probably just more my own game. Probably looking at players like Kane Williamson or someone like that, who's maybe not necessarily known for slogging or whacking, but can still put up some decent scores in T20 cricket just by playing good cricket shots. Or a Virat Kohli or someone like that. There's so much to learn from so many great cricketers. So yeah, just taking bits and pieces and seeing what works for other people and then trying it out for myself.
And your cover drive, I think one of the debates, the great debates in South African cricket is who's got a better cover drive, Laura Wolfart or Aidan Markram? And Aidan Markram says Laura Wolfart, and I'm assuming you're going to say Aidan Markram. But what is it about that shot? Like, how do you get it? It's a difficult shot to play, right? So what are the mechanics of, first of all, getting it right, and secondly, making it look beautiful?
Well, I think I've just grown up opening the batting. So naturally, a lot of the balls that I've been facing have been outside off and full with people trying to nick me off. So it's just a shot that I've had to work on more than others and play more than others. It's just, I think, a coincidence that it looks good. It's just the way that I play it. I do spend a lot of time trying to work on my technique, though, and look at videos and slow-mo and stuff like that and see what my hands are doing to try and get it right, but more from a cricketing point of view than an aesthetic point of view.
Do you have like a row of photographs at home of like all your different cover drives? And it's like, which one looks the best?
No, but I probably have way too many cricket videos on my phone of just me training and trying to see what's happening.
Yeah, photographs are not the thing anymore.
Yeah.
Laura, you've got a lot of other strings to your bow, Firdaus mentioned. I mean, music, the singing, all that sort of stuff. I mean, and obviously, you know, you were studying prior to sort of becoming a full-time cricketer. Do you still get time for any of that now you're the national captain, no less?
I'm still studying, sadly, but I'm nearly done. I'm doing a Bachelor of Science in Life Sciences. When I turned on the medicine, I started studying through NISA, just doing a BSc. But spread it out over a couple of years, so I'm still busy. But I got two more modules to do, and then I'll hopefully be done by June, July. So nearly there. The workload is quite a lot now, these last 6 months with the captaincy as well. But so far, it's all right. We'll see come exam time.
And what's the purpose of it?
Well, my majors are physiology and genetics. And at the time when I started it, the purpose was just to get credits for if I go back to medicine one day, so that hopefully I could get some subjects off first year. It was just the thing that lined up the most credits-wise. But it's looking less and less likely that I'm going to be 35 and wanting to study for six more years. So I'll see what happens when I get there.
Does it help having something else, albeit very busy? Are you the kind of person who likes to have something other than cricket to think about or needs to have that? Or was it, you know, simply a case of something, as you say, you know, something to fall back on in future?
Yeah, mainly something to fall back on. Some days I think it is nice to sort of take my mind off of everything. But other days like today when I've had a full day of training, it's the last thing I want to do is sit down and do a uni. So it's probably been more of a hassle than a joy, but it's, yeah, I'm getting it done, which is good.
Now, Laura, we're recording this podcast as you're about to embark on a test match. And by the time our listeners hear it, the game will have taken place. So we won't talk too much about that. But can we discuss some issues around test cricket? So Meg Lanning said that one of her feelings is that women should play test cricket either regularly with a schedule and practice time and that sort of thing, or not at all. And I'm inclined to agree with her. It's a debate we've had on this podcast, especially as we've seen the one-off test increase. What do you feel? Because I suppose, you know, training with the red ball is different, right? So first of all, do you want to play more tests? And how can you do it in a way that's sustainable and credible?
Yeah, I definitely want to play more test cricket. I really enjoyed the one that we got to play, I think it's almost 2 years ago now. But yeah, it is a massive challenge not having any domestic red ball experience to go straight into an international test match. Sort of like studying for an exam last minute, trying to cram in all the knowledge about test match fields and plans and all of that. But yeah, I would love to have more of it in the calendar. I think the more regularly we do it, the better the product will be. But obviously playing one test every 2 years, there's a chance that the games won't be that great if it's not something that we get to practice regularly. And it's probably something that would have to come into domestic cricket a little bit as well, just to sort of develop that base and the knowledge of the red ball.
I'm really interested to know why. I mean, everyone we talk to says, I want to play more test cricket. But why? Because it's not like where, you know, the money is in all the leagues, the interest is in a lot of the leagues, and test cricket's hard. You know, we speak to players who tell us bowling that fourth and fifth spell takes it out of the legs, takes it out of you mentally. Like, why?
I think it's just for the challenge. I love watching test cricket just to see the little battles within the battles. I think it's sort of the more real form of cricket. And I think you get exposed if some technical things are lacking or if something is not up to scratch in your game. Whereas in T20 cricket, I think you can sometimes get away with something just because you're going hard and showing a lot of intent. Whereas in test cricket, I think it's more your actual skill and your actual art. So yeah, it's something that I think is going to be very difficult. But yeah, definitely looking forward to the challenge.
You mentioned having to study an awful lot heading into a test match. What is the key challenge do you think? Is it concentration? Is it for you player management? What's the hardest thing do you think to focus on for a test?
Well, I think coming back and back to back is something that we're not used to, having the 4 days in a row. So I think from a fitness point of view, recovery is going to be really important, just to be able to field 100 overs one day and then to come back and bat the next day. I think it's going to be physically and mentally a really big challenge and a big effort from the girls. I think normally after an ODI, we sort of get the next day off, hopefully, and get to recover a bit. So I think that's going to be a big challenge. And then just for me, captaincy-wise, just to figure out my fields and my plans. I think obviously Test cricket, the fields are a lot different with all those slips that you have in there. So that's sort of been a bit of a learning curve so far.
So, Laura, the test format is obviously really dear to your heart, but you'll be playing a lot more white ball cricket, I imagine, through your career and definitely in the foreseeable future with a lot of events coming up. You know, there's a lot of opportunity for teams to challenge for trophies. You've now been part of a side that reached the final of a World Cup. You've been part of sides that have reached semifinals. What does South Africa need to do to get over the line?
I think we definitely have the talent within our group. I think we've proven that now with beating some of the best teams in the world and having beat all the teams now. But yeah, I think it's just, we just need a bit more consistency. I think we have brilliant games and then we have the next game where we don't play as well as we could have. And I think it just boils down to sort of mental prep and training and all of the things that we do behind the scenes at home. So I think we need to go back and work hard on a lot of specific things to hopefully get that consistency in the big moments a bit better.
Okay, now we come to our special feature here on Power Play. So we're going to play a little game, Laura, where we're going to ask you to build the perfect cricketer. So we'll give you a little criteria and you can name any cricketer, male, female, anyone, past, present, future, if you decide to do so. And to fit those categories, and at the end we'll see what kind of cricketer we end up with. So our first quality is power hitting.
Power hitting, maybe like one of the West Indian guys, like a Andre Russell or something. They hit a long ball.
Good one. Number two is catching.
Catching, at the moment I'm going to go with Beth Mooney because she hasn't dropped a single ball this whole series and keeps catching me when I edge them.
Ground fielding?
I'll say Virat Kohli. I think his intensity in the field is always amazing.
Awesome. The next one is death bowling.
Bumrah, I think. I'll go with him.
Yep, good choice. Okay, the next one's an interesting one. It's bowling variations.
That's a difficult one. I'm going to go with Ayabonga in my team. I feel like she has a really good slow ball.
You know what? That's who I was going to go with as well. Yes, we agree.
Nice.
And then batting innovations.
So innovations.
Strokes. Yeah, so someone who really that out of the box.
Maybe that Sky guy from India. He plays some freaky ramps that I have no idea how he does that.
Okay, that Sky guy. And then the next two ones, it's who do you think is the best in the power play for batting and the best in the power play for bowling?
Power play for bowling, I'm going to say Marizan Kapp. I think she's insane with the ball. And power play for batting, I think I've got to go Meg Lanning, the GOAT.
Amazing choices. And then our last one, who do you think is the game's best tactician?
Tactician. I think it was Meg Lanning. So I'm still going to say Meg Lanning, just because I think you can't win however many World Cups she won and not be a good tactician. So I'm sticking to Meg.
Fantastic. You've got a very multicultural team there. It's dominated by Australians, though. So it's interesting that every time we do this, we get a lot of Australian names. But it sounds like a good, perfect player. Laura, before we end off, I guess the one thing I think is really important to ask you is, you know, you come from a country where women's sport has been in the spotlight for the last 12 months. We've seen some amazing things. At the same time, of course, we know that women have tough lives here. What would be your kind of message to people who who want to draw inspiration from what women have achieved in this country, on the field, off the field, and what they can look forward to in the future?
Well, I think women's cricket has really developed immensely in the last 5 years. So I think there's so much potential and so much talent within the game. And I'm just really excited to see what happens within the next 5 to 10 years. And I think, yeah, I'm really proud of this group and this team, just showing what you can do as a woman in South Africa, and just to be able to build a future out of a talent that you have, I think is really amazing. And to be able to do what we love every day is really special. So I think that, yeah, if you have a dream, and even if it's a bit weird, like playing cricket full time, I think you should go after it, because you never know what's going to happen.
Lovely. Thank you so much, Laura. That was phenomenal. We wish you all the best.
Awesome.
For your upcoming
Thank you.
Tours and your summer, and we'll chat to you again soon.
Cool. Thanks so much for having me.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end,
what will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Me.
Well, I got to say, Laura Wolfart is one of those people who makes me wonder if I'm actually a little bit of an underachiever in life. She's studying for a degree. She's nearly finished. She's a top quality musician. She's a captain. She's a great batter. She's a gun fielder. I don't know, like, maybe we should have done a bit more with our lives and with our time. She's a really impressive individual from a cricketing perspective and from a leadership perspective. I mean, you cover a lot of cricket around the world. You know a lot of leaders. Where would you say she's stacking up? How do you feel she comes across in that regard?
She's a very impressive human, as you say. I mean, she could have been a doctor by now were it not for the fact that she's incredible at cricket also. But yeah, I mean, I probably don't know her as well as you, having only interviewed her a couple of times, but I do not ever fail to be impressed by just what she brings in terms of those leadership qualities. I mean, she's still only pretty young as well. And to sort of take on that role, I don't know, when she comes across to me as a sort of person who says what needs to be said, but, you know, doesn't sort of go sort of further than that unnecessarily. And I think that's what a lot of players look to and respect in a captain, you know. And I think it is early in her captaincy, but even the fact that she decided or, you know, wanted to take on the role on an interim basis initially to see if she could do it alongside, you know, her batting responsibilities, and, you know, with what she said in her interview, there was to her mind some relative inexperience yet given her youth. So I just think that was smart. She just comes across as a smart person, and you know, from what I've seen so far, a smart captain. What do you make of her achievements so far?
I guess she's also very quietly ambitious, because she's not really hidden the fact that she did want to captain South Africa, and she just wasn't sure when that would be. Nobody expected what happened with Danie van Niekerk to happen. People didn't expect that she would not make the T20 World Cup side and then choose to retire, and Cricket South Africa needing to quickly find a replacement. And Sunelise, I think, had done the job fairly well. In fact, my first thought when her captaincy was discontinued was that, oh gosh, that's really harsh on her. You know, she's led the team to a World Cup final in pretty difficult circumstances at the time the Danie van Niekerk issue was so fresh. And the way that Cricket South Africa handled her, either she stepped down or they told her to go, and they were never honest about what that was. So I thought that left the team in a little bit of a tumultuous position. And for Laura Wolfart to then step up and say, okay, despite all of this, despite the fact that senior players are unhappy with the continuation of Hilton Marenghi, let me try and take this on, would have taken a lot of fortitude from her, especially knowing she is the team's best batter. And I don't think there's any kind of debate around that. Even her T20 game now has really stepped up. Her strike rate's improved. She's not just trying to bash every ball out the park and then, you know, not getting it right. She is actually nudging and nerdling a little bit as well. So her kind of gameplay has really improved. I think she's a great thinker of cricket. I know that she watches a lot of cricket. And interestingly, she also watches a lot of men's cricket. And I wanted to be careful before I said that, because we try to not make these comparisons, you know, and ask women cricketers who their favorite male player is. But I think Laura Wolfart, in her study of the game, has watched so much cricket, men or women, that she's actually got a very rounded picture of what makes a good tactician. And you would have seen when we asked her for building her favorite cricketer and the names that she picked pretty much an equal number of men's and women's players. So that's a good reflection, I think, that she's thinking about the game as a holistic thing, not just this is women's cricket, this is men's cricket. She's got an idea of how the skills from the two can be transferred. And I think if she stays in the job, I mean, there's no doubt that she could end up as South Africa's leading run scorer in both white ball formats, maybe even the test format if they play more tests. And she could end up as South Africa's greatest ever women's cricketer. And that's saying something, because there have been some good ones. So I really think that we've got someone on our hands here who is just outstanding. Managing her is going to be difficult because they play a lot more these days. She also gets picked up in leagues. So that's maybe the challenge.
Yeah, for sure. And what about South Africa as a whole, as a team? They've got Sri Lanka next at home and then a bit of a break. So, I mean, what are they sort of looking like in terms of, you know, their series coming up? I mean, are they having to make those same scheduling sort of considerations that other teams like England have recently had to make with the clash between the WPL and their tour of New Zealand? You know, how are things panning out for the South Africa women's team in the next few months?
You know, I think either by luck or by design, but knowing Cricket South Africa, probably just by luck, they managed to not schedule a series during the WPL. So they've left that window pretty much free. And then the Sri Lanka tour is late March to early April, which is really, really the late end of summer here in South Africa. By the time we hit Easter weekend, especially in the Cape, we tend to say, you know, that's it, the summer's over. It's a very early Easter weekend this year as well, which is worth remembering. So they'll play Sri Lanka. Of course, there's a little bit of a grudge encounter because South Africa lost the World Cup opener to Sri Lanka. That's been long forgotten after they got to the final. But I think for Sri Lanka, who would have seen Bangladesh come to South Africa and beat them — they didn't beat them in a series, but they did beat them in a couple of games — they'll see this as an opportunity. You know, they can upset South Africa at home in conditions that maybe we don't think traditionally suit Sri Lanka. So I think that'll be a very interesting series to keep an eye on. And then, as you say, there's this long winter break. It almost feels like a more traditional Southern Hemisphere summer. You know, come the middle of April, everything stops. Of course, the women's players will then go on. Some of them have taken up domestic deals in England. Nadine de Klerk is one of them. And some of them will play in leagues like the 100. And then preparations will begin for the T20 World Cup. We touched on it earlier, but the real massive challenge for Cricket South Africa will be to decide what they're going to do about the coach. If they leave it too late, Hilton Marang, will they have to take them to the T20 World Cup? And, you know, we say that, and it makes it seem like we're saying, oh, but he shouldn't, because he's been there too long. And he's also had a lot of success. So I'm not sure whether it's a good thing or a bad thing. I think if the players have voiced that they would like some new energy and new influence and new ideas, that should be listened to. But I know that Cricket South Africa have had their challenges in trying to replace Marang. They ran a round of applications. They did some interviews and they didn't name anyone. They didn't find anyone who could take the job, or at least that's what they told us. So that will be the winter challenge, is what do you do about this situation? And can they finally appoint a women's director of cricket? Some names were tossed around for that, including Dinesha Devnarine, the former international, who's the only woman to hold a level 4 coaching certificate in South Africa. So, you know, there are a few things that need to happen behind the scenes over the winter for South Africa. I think they could be quite competitive come the T20 World Cup in Bangladesh. Conditions, of course, will be the thing. You know, can they overcome the conditions as much as the opposition? But they've beaten Australia in a T20. They've beaten them in an ODI. So a lot of things are possible. As South Africans, we never, ever like to go into World Cup saying this is the one we're going to win, because it's never happened before. But I think they've got a chance. And I think they'll have a good chance in India 2025. Probably a better chance in England 2026. But, you know, we like to say that so we can keep delaying the process.
Yeah, it's I guess it still feels like yesterday to me, that match, the opener to the T20 World Cup that they lost to Sri Lanka. And you know, we're now looking ahead to the next T20 World Cup in Bangladesh at the end of this year. But is there an element of, do you think, South Africa having made that final, you know, only a year ago, is there an element of them carrying a level of confidence or building confidence that's going to stand them in good stead come the next edition in Bangladesh?
I think so. I think reaching the final was always something that South Africans needed to do to see that it could be done. So now teams know, men's teams and women's teams, that it's possible to break that semi-final hoodoo and to get to a final. And that's great. I mean, the men got to the 50-over World Cup semi, the under-19s again, the 50-over World Cup semi. So I suppose they still need to break that. But the women's team have shown they can go a step further. I think what will give them more confidence are those wins over Australia, especially because they happened in Australia. So knowing that they were not overawed by conditions, they were not overawed by the names on the team sheet, or even the crowds and the environment around them, I think will help. And I think that they I think they'll go in feeling pretty good about themselves. But you know what? So will India. Those are, you know, that's basically their backyard kind of thing right next door to them. So will Bangladesh. What amazing development we've seen from them. So will England, who, I mean, you will know better than I will. England are going to be a team that they were hurting after losing that semi-final. That was like a really big thing for them. So I think we could have possibly, I mean, here's one for you just to kind of, as we come to the close, could we have the most open Women's World Cup that we've seen?
I really like to think so. I mean, we have seen, as you mentioned, there's one-off wins where, you know, we've seen teams beating other teams for the first time, South Africa and Australia. We've seen Sri Lanka beat England in a T20 series here last year. Several others, you know, over the course of the past 12 months. So there's certainly hints and signs of it. Whether that's something that's going to take a little bit more time to build before it becomes a more sort of open tournament, who knows? But with the, I guess, the speed of development in the women's game as well, that's something that's happening, you know, apace since, you know, greater professionalization, more franchise leagues, players playing with other top players from around the world and against other top players from around the world more often. I like to think that it will be very open, the next edition of the T20 World Cup. I guess it remains to be seen, but we've got a lot to look forward to.
Yeah, definitely. And we've got months and months to talk about and to build up to that T20 World Cup. And in between now and then, we will be bringing you loads more great interviews. Thank you for joining us here on ESPN Cricket Info Power Play. And we will be back with more content very soon. Until next time.